It only needs one at bat to come to him. Like
that. Oh, Eloy Jimenez! Do not walk anyone in front of him! Wow! Welcome back. Hi, Mom. See you later. 5-3.
And that three-run homer by Eloy Jimenez, who just came off the injured list, ended the Royals' six-game winning streak. The Royals are looking for their first seven-game winning streak since 2017. And since 2017, they've had five or seven-game losing streaks, something like that.
Yeah.
But no seven-game winning streaks, and still don't. Welcome to Sports Ticket. Wade and Dusty with you as the Royals fall to the White Sox last night by a final of 5-3. Royals now 43-56 on the season. Seem to be on their way to celebrating starter Brad Keller's 26th birthday in the best of ways. The right-hander allowed a solo homer in the fourth, but otherwise limited the White Sox to four hits and two walks, four Ks and seven innings, only threw 90 pitches. In four starts this July, Keller now has an ERA of 2.28. He exited with a 3-1 lead and a chance to become the fourth Royals pitcher to ever celebrate a win on his birthday. How do people come up with those stats? But two of the Royals' higher-leverage bullpen arms came apart in the eighth inning, allowing four runs, and the Royals lose 5-3, snapping their six-game winning streak. Lefty Jacob Brintz came in to face the bottom of the White Sox order. He gave up a leadoff double, then a two-strike count. He tried to bury a slider. Instead, it hit the pinch hitter, and that was the big boo-boo in that inning. A wild pitch, two groundouts led to a run, so Matheny went to Kyle Zimmer for the final out. Zimmer has been really struggling month of July. The Royals intentionally walked Jose Abreu, which makes sense. He had 75 RBIs on the season. To face Jimenez, who has 1-for-7 so far in his first series with the White Sox after nearly a four-month stay on the injured list. And you heard what happened. Three-run homer, and the Royals lose. Here is Mike Matheny on pulling his starter after 90 pitches and going seven strong on his birthday.
We felt it was time. 90 pitches, he got through seven for us, and did a great job. You could tell he was feeling it at times. Savvy did a nice job going out and giving him a breath. You could tell he'd worked hard. Did his job, gave us a chance, put it in the back end of the pen to finish it off. And he was great today. He did give up a home run on the changeup, but he threw some really good ones and threw it pretty often. Had a lot of confidence in it. The slider was good. We talk about Brad being a contact guy, but he gets into a bind and then gets two big punch outs. And he's got that ability to do that. Not that he chases it all the time, but he's got the stuff. And today the slider really helped him get the swing and miss that he needed to in a big situation. So I thought his stuff was great. He deserved better than that.
Royals back in action tonight. Game three of the four-game set against the first-place White Sox. It's Chris Bubich on the hill, 3-4. The lefty with ERA of 4.72. 7-10 first pitch at the K. Royals hosting the White Sox. Local sports, Dusty.
Yeah, K-18 State Baseball Tournament finishing up today in Lucas. A consolation game between Phillipsburg and Smith Centers at 3 o'clock here this afternoon. And the championship game between Clay Center and Concordia CMB approximately 5:30 following that consolation game. So that's the final day of the state baseball tournament there. Full brackets and info for postseason baseball at ncksports.com. Republic County also begins play today in the American Legion State Tournament down in Pittsburgh against Marysville. So you can find, again, all that info at ncksports.com.
Fantastic. So Patrick Mahomes is only 25, right?
Yes.
What's he going to do when he's 30 and he owns the entire city of Kansas City?
It's a good question.
I mean, he's on pace to just own everything. I think at some point he'll actually be a player and the actual full-time owner of the Kansas City Chiefs. Oh, it's possible. Or what maybe Patrick Mahomes is angling for, and you know what? This is brilliant if he does. If this whole football thing doesn't work out, I can go play baseball and I'm the owner. I'm an owner. And if that don't work out, I can go play soccer because I'm part owner. If you don't know, Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes deepened his ties with Kansas City yesterday. He purchased an ownership stake in Major League Soccer club Sporting KC. The move comes just a year after the two-time MVP. And we say two-time, that's a little misleading in the story. He's a Super Bowl MVP and regular season MVP, but he's not a two-time MVP of the league or the Super Bowl. He's one of each. But he's bought into, of course, about a year ago, he bought into the Royals ownership group. And they say that Mahomes and Sporting KC have discussed their potential partnership for about a year. Mahomes' fiance, Brittany, is a co-owner of Kansas City's National Women's Soccer League franchise. So what does Patrick and his fiance not own in Kansas City? And we know the biggest thing that Mahomes has accomplished since being in Kansas City, besides winning the Super Bowl, is he somehow got Whataburger to come to Kansas City. So
that's the one.
Riley and other people are happy about that, even though Riley's a Cowboys fan.
I see it in the back of the Royals game the other night. I was like, oh, here we go. Whataburger coming soon.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, Mahomes very soon will own the entire city of Kansas City, both on the Kansas and Missouri side.
Yeah.
In fact, he just might.
He has moved into Kansas.
He just might buy all of Missouri and recall it Mahomes.
Yeah.
It's very possible. Be a whole other state called Mahomes. We're talking about relabeling conferences with their names. If there's a whole bunch of realignment, why not? I own 51% of Missouri. I can call it whatever I want. I'm going to call it Mahomesville. Me and my homies. That's the new state, right? All right, Olympics update. Katie Ledecky won yesterday and lost yesterday. She was not on the medal stand. Finished, what was it? What event was it she finished fourth in?
Fifth in the 200-meter freestyle.
Okay. Yeah. But she did win the first ever 1,500-meter women's freestyle. So Katie Ledecky does get another gold, and her teammate from the USA, Erica Sullivan, swimming in her first ever Olympics, took silver, so that's pretty exciting. And that was kind of the highlight. USA men today, they did win in basketball over Iran, 120-66. Before you get too excited, Iran's ranked 23rd in the world. Damian Lillard led the way with 21 points. Team USA made 19 three-pointers. The number 12th ranked Czech Republic is waiting for Team USA on Saturday. If the Americans take care of business in that game, they'll reach the knockout stage. France and Australia, who have already beaten this version of Team USA, will likely be waiting for them there. See, that's misleading as well. This is why I love to correct national stories. That's not the same version, because Chris Middleton, Drew Holiday, Devin Booker didn't play when Australia and France, France, I guess, did. But Australia, they haven't. Mm-hmm. Australia hasn't played the USA with that team. Also, frequent rival Spain could be in the horizon. And, of course, Luka Doncic in Slovenia, who was in the Olympics for the first time. And Luka, all he did is 48 the other day. Luka's the first guy to score 45 or more in an Olympic game and also in the NBA. He's only, 22, 23, very young guy. And Slovenia might be the most dangerous team of all for the Team USA. Wouldn't that be something? Luka against a whole bunch of all-stars, and Luka and a whole bunch of guys we don't know beat a whole bunch of all-stars.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, it's possible.
Oh, for sure it is.
No doubt. So that's very interesting. American gymnastics sensation Simone Biles will not be defending her individual all-around gold medal at the 2020 Tokyo Olympics. After pulling out of the women's gymnastics team final event on Tuesday, Biles, the most prominent American athlete at the Summer Games, will not be participating in tomorrow's all-around competition. Biles withdrew from the team final to focus on her mental health, and she is not participating in the all-around for the same reason, according to USA Gymnastics. They announced that earlier this morning. After further medical evaluation, Simone Biles is withdrawn from the final individual all-around competition at the Games in order to focus on her mental health. She will be evaluated daily to determine whether or not she'll participate in next week's event finals. Jade Carey, who finished ninth in qualifications for Team USA, will replace Simone Biles in the event. Let's hear from Biles on why she has been withdrawing from events at the Olympics.
No injury, thankfully, and that's why I took a step back, because I didn't want to do something silly out there and get injured. So I thought it was best if these girls took over and did the rest of the job, which they absolutely did. They're Olympic silver medalists now, and they should be really proud of themselves for how well they did last minute having to go in. And it's been really stressful, this Olympic Games. I think just as a whole, not having an audience, there are a lot of different variables going into it. It's been a long week. It's been a long Olympic process. It's been a long year. So just a lot of different variables, and I think we're just a little bit too stressed out. But we should be out here having fun, and sometimes that's not the case. Today has been really stressful. We had a workout this morning. It went okay, and then just that 5.5-hour wait or something, I was just like shaking, could barely nap. I've just never felt like this going into a competition before, and I tried to go out here and have fun and warm up in the back, went a little bit better. But then once I came out here, I was like, no, mental is not there, so I just need to let the girls do it and focus on myself.
This is, as you can imagine, and this is becoming a very hot topic across the country, Naomi Osaka. We've talked about it with professional athletes and mental health, and there are skeptics out there, people that are very skeptical. There are people that are very mean that live in our world that honestly, I saw a really good one. I thought it was really good. I saw somebody put on Twitter They said some of the same people that are talking about how she's not tough enough mentally and she should be fighting through this are the same people that can't fight through and wear a mask for 5 minutes going into a store. It's an excellent point.
Mm-hmm.
You're criticizing a young lady who has done a lot for the country in gymnastics as a whole. She's gone through a lot, and there also was a doctor involved with the Women's Olympic Gymnastics team who's in prison right now because of all kinds of sexual assaults and all kinds of things. That's just absolutely hideous. That was covered up for years. And who knows if there's anything tied to all that that Simone Biles is dealing with. And it's not really our business unless she wants it to be our business. And then we got some, and this is how I picture it. Some overweight guy sitting on a couch with his belt unbuckled, with a bag of potato chips and a beer in his other hand. And then he puts the beer down maybe, and he grabs his phone and talks about how horrible people are and how they're not tough and they're wimps and meaner words than that. Jordan would never do that in Game 7 NBA Finals. You're right, because he never was in a Game 7 NBA Finals, so you're right about that. LeBron wouldn't do this, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, dude, this isn't about LeBron. It ain't about Michael Jordan. This is about one person, Simone Biles. This isn't Naomi Osaka. We're talking about Simone Biles. And this is an Olympic athlete compared to a regular athlete that plays every single year, every single season, so forth and so on. The Olympics only come every 4 years, or in this case, every 5 years. And I just picture that type of person that thinks they think they know it all. They want to comment on everything. And yet, if they actually looked at the mirror, and I mean actually opened their eyes and looked in the mirror, they'd be like, wow, I don't have much going for me if I'm going to criticize somebody I don't know. And I'm going to talk about their mental health issues. And I don't even have the toughness to go outside when it's 90 degrees because it's too hot. Or I'm too lazy to get up and hit the button on the TV. I got to find the remote. Or I'm too lazy to get up and go to the fridge. So I ask my wife, if that guy's lucky enough to have a wife, or anybody, to go, or my kids, because I'm lazy and I'm sitting on a couch and I don't want to get up. And I'm talking about toughness for some young girl, young lady, who's all of 5 foot tall, who has, I'm sure, has had all kinds of injuries in her gymnastics career. And this guy's the expert on mental toughness. That's what I picture, the people that are commenting on this stuff. And when you immediately start comparing Simone Biles to Michael Jordan, you've lost me. You've absolutely lost me. Well, I mean, what? That's like me comparing Dusty to Dan Patrick. All right, Dan Patrick has a national radio show. Okay, what do they have in common? Dusty and Dan Patrick are radio people. And that's all they have in common. That's it.
Yeah.
Dusty's his own radio guy. Dusty has his own talents. Dan Patrick has his own talents. Oh, wait a minute. They're both white. Okay, other than that, what do they have in common? They both have nice voices. Okay, but then you sit here and say, well, you know, Dusty, he's not doing his job and he's stepping away from calling games, but Dan Patrick wouldn't do that. What's it got? They're not even that. Jordan and Biles, the only thing they have in common is first of all, they're not even current athletes because Jordan's retired. The only thing that Michael Jordan and Simone Biles have in common is that they, at one point in their careers, have been an athlete. That's it. And they both were Olympians.
And they're champions.
They both were Olympians. Both are champions. You compare LeBron. What does LeBron and Simone Biles have in common? They're both champions. They both won gold medals for their country.
Yeah.
That's it. They don't play the same sport.
No.
Gymnastics, they do competitions every year, but the Olympics come every 4 years. The NBA Finals don't come every 4 years. And so when you start criticizing Simone Biles and comparing her to other people, and this is a funny thing that people, and the people that are lazy, and the argument is, well, Jordan, this is the equivalent of Jordan getting to Game 7 NBA Finals, and it's too much heat to handle, and so he quits, blah, blah, blah. This is the equivalent of LeBron, bailing out Game 7 NBA Finals. This is the equivalent of Tom Brady backing out of the Super Bowl after a long season. You know what? Do you know why Michael Jordan retired the first time?
It was definitely partially a mental issue because his dad was murdered.
His dad was murdered, and he's also burnt out. And you know why he retired the second time? He was bored, and he was burnt out.
Yeah.
Michael Jordan took two breaks from basketball. And he took a long, extended period of time in those breaks. And Simone Biles, God forbid, wants to take a few days or maybe a week or two. And yes, the Olympics will be gone and she won't be able to do it in, for another 4 years, or actually three, in 2024. I mean, for crying out loud, LeBron James has load management games where he takes off and doesn't play every game. For all we know, it is a mental reason that LeBron sits out. It might we hear it's an ankle. It might be that he just needs a rest mentally. Okay? You sit here and you don't even know the situation, Michael Jordan and LeBron James. Michael Jordan quit basketball or retired, okay? Which same thing really. Mm-hmm. He retired twice. Well, more than that, but he retired twice with the Bulls.
Yeah.
So he needed breaks. He was burnt out. Watch The Last Dance. He even talks about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, the pressures, people close to Jordan, there was so much pressure on Jordan. People have no idea what it's like to be Michael Jordan. Well, guess what? Here's something else they have in common. Nobody knows what it's like to be Simone Biles, who people have been saying, and it's been building leading up to the Olympics, because every Olympics, we've got to find one athlete and call them the center of everybody's attention for the United States of America. Even though we have 600 and some athletes at the Olympics, we've always got to circle one and make that person the focal point of the entire Olympics, right?
Yeah.
Who's been the athlete that's been the focal point of the Olympics for quite some time and now no longer swims?
Michael Phelps.
Michael Phelps. Yeah. So we don't have Michael Phelps. So who do we have left? Well, honestly, the two athletes have been focused on the most when it comes to the Olympics and in the pre-market exposure and promos that NBC has done are two women, Katie Ledecky and Simone Biles. There is not even a man that they're fully pushing for the Olympics. It is two women, Katie Ledecky and Simone Biles. And Katie Ledecky gets silver, and it's like a bitter, unbelievable disappointment for the country. But it ain't for Katie Ledecky. She's like, I can't win them all. Okay, she won gold last night. That's pretty cool. She isn't Michael Phelps. She ain't going to win gold in every single event. That's rare. You may never see that again, okay?
Yeah.
And then Simone Biles, the Team USA yesterday won second. They got silver without Biles competing. That's pretty impressive. Instead, it's like this bitter disappointment that we didn't get the gold. And somehow it's Simone Biles' fault because she was selfish and she didn't fight through her mental health issues. Listen, if she's not thinking clearly when she's on the vault or the beam, she could have a serious injury. If she's doing a somersault in a floor exercise and she lands on her head and she's completely not there mentally, people sit here and act like gymnastics is not a physical sport. People act like gymnastics is just, oh, it's not that hard. What are they doing? They dance a little bit and they do the rings, which, by the way, that is super hard. Balancing on a beam. Dude, there are people I know that can't even walk on a straight line on Earth, let alone stand on a beam 4 inches wide, 4 feet above the floor, whatever it is, 5 feet. I mean, and do flips and somersaults and handstands. What and you know how many times these ladies and guys that do gymnastics too, you know how many times they fall? You know how many times they mess up in practicing? You know how many times they've been hurt? I'll guarantee you they've got lots of bumps and bruises, maybe even broken bones. Mm-hmm. And then there is the mental aspect of the gymnastics. You are all by yourself in front of the world when you're doing a floor exercise. You're in front of everybody on the beam or the vault or the rings or whatever it might be, and it's just you. It ain't your team collectively. You're part of a team, but you're not all four passing the baton to each other. That's not how it works. Mm-hmm. And so there is a ton of pressure, especially when you get to the Olympics, where you, Simone Biles, are the focal point and the marketing person, basically, in regards to marketing, has put all their stuff around Simone Biles. They've been saying, leading up to the Olympics, she's the greatest gymnast of all time. They've been saying she's probably the best female athlete in the world. That's a lot of pressure, man.
Yeah.
I mean, we talk about Michael Jordan. He's the greatest basketball player of his generation. He's the greatest player of all time. Or LeBron could be, or LeBron is. We don't even think about all the pressure LeBron has on him. And I'm not sitting here saying that you should feel sorry for LeBron, because LeBron's got a lot of things going for him. But he's still a human being. And Michael Jordan was a human being. And if Michael Jordan got burnt out twice and retired twice from the National Basketball Association and at the highest level when he had won championships, why the hell can't you give Simone Biles a little bit of a break and understand that she might need a break as well? Instead, people act like she's not tough. It's this, it's that, and so forth, and so on. And I'll be honest with you, I think it's even maybe even tougher to do what she's doing, and that is stepping away for the betterment of her team because she knows she's not focused. She knows she has some issues she's going through, and yet she's still out there. It would be very easy for her to just go hide behind and watch it from a room once she said, I'm not going to participate. Mm-hmm. Instead, she's out there helping her teammates doing the all-around. She's cheering them on. She's helping get chalk for them. She's like a team manager. And I know that stinks because we wanted to see her compete. And that's what this really comes down to. People that are really upset, and a lot of people that are upset, don't follow gymnastics except for 2 weeks out of a four-year stretch. They don't know jack about gymnastics. People are talking about gymnastics and then criticizing Simone Biles and talking and making fun of her mental health issues, which, by the way, is a medical issue. I saw people saying, well, it's not a medical issue. It's a mental health issue. Mental health is a medical issue. For crying out loud, educate yourself. And Simone Biles, you're upset because you wanted to see Simone Biles compete. So you're going to be upset that you can't watch her compete, but you haven't watched her the last 3 years in world championships. You didn't even probably know that she won anything at any other level. All you know is the Olympics, because the only time you care about skateboarding, the only time you care about Olympic skiing is the Winter Olympics. The only time you care about USA soccer, men or women, is the Olympics or World Cup. The only time you care about swimming is the Olympics. Let's be honest. How many of you actually worry or know anything about swimming except for the Olympics?
No.
Do you know how many Do you know how many world championships Kayla Deke has? Do you know how many world championships Michael Phelps won? Do you know how many swimming races Michael Phelps won? Do you know how many world championships Simone Biles won? Do you know how many gymnastics meets that she's won? Do you know how many medals she's won? Like, we can easily say golf. Tiger Woods has won so many golf tournaments, right? Mm-hmm. But and people probably have an idea, somewhat, or we know how many majors. The only thing we go is a lot of people probably don't even know how many gold medals Simone Biles has won in her career. Mm-hmm. But yet those people are the experts telling Simone Biles she's a wimp and many other mean things. Is the timing odd and weird? Yeah, it is. I mean, you get to this point and you work so hard. I'm disappointed for her because she's gotten to this point, and now for her to step away, that to me, that's got to be extremely tough. She's handled this with grace and dignity. Something that all these other people that don't understand what the dignity is, they can't even spell it, they can't even probably read it, and they sure as hell don't have it themselves, and yet they're the ones that want to sit here and pile on a girl or a gal, young lady, who has done nothing but great things at the gymnastics level, represent our country with grace and dignity, and people are going to rip her because she's taking a break because she needs a mental health break, and you want to compare her to Michael Jordan? That he took an extended health break. Michael Jordan, when he retired, he was out smoking cigars and golfing with his buddies and betting all kinds of money. He was at the casino, for crying out loud. Jordan took a nice extended break. And he got out of the limelight until he went and did baseball the second time. Baseball. Yeah. Okay, and then he got back in the limelight with baseball. So the whole Jordan comparison to Simone Biles is silly, and you're just trying to make your argument as in regards to your own agenda and your narrative. So you use Game 7 NBA Finals, which doesn't apply because Jordan never played Game 7 NBA Finals, which is funny. So the joke is on you for not knowing what the hell you're talking about. Okay? So, listen, I have said this for a long, long time. Mental health is a major issue in this country, and it's never been a bigger issue than it is today. You know why? Because we're still going through COVID. I just talked to somebody the other day, a friend of mine and their client of mine, and they said, what do you think about how this Delta variant's starting to pick up and everything? And I said, we may eventually have to go back to mask. I said, I hope not, but we might have to. I said, all I know is that we can't do what we did last year and have a lockdown, and we can't go through it again. And I was about to say the next thing, and she goes, I will go insane. Mm-hmm. She goes, I will go insane. And I'm going to tell you something. She's one of the most sane people I know. If she's going to go insane, mm-hmm. what's going to happen to everybody else? So we all have mental health issues from COVID. We have issues and fear of mask, or we have fear of vaccine, or we want people to get vaccinated. We fear people won't get vaccinated. We fear we're going to get something because other people aren't responsible, in our opinion, by getting vaccinated. Or we're upset with people that push vaccinations on us. Or we're upset and we're mad because we had COVID, or we got it a second time, or vaccine doesn't protect me 100% like an armor shield. You know, we have all these mental things we go through every single day. And a lot of it, there was a lot of mental health issues before COVID, but there's sure a lot more now. and you're just going to blow this off and tell Simone Biles she's just not strong enough? You're going to say it's not a medical issue? And can you be any more uninformed, people? If you're one of those people listening to this program right now, you really need to stop. You really need to stop. Because I can assure you and guarantee you that you yourself have a mental issue in some sort of way. Whether that mental issue is you have a hard time getting out of bed because you really don't want to go to work, that's a mental health issue. If you are struggling disciplining your kids and you're getting stressed out, that's a mental health issue. Is it enough to go seek therapy? I don't know. It depends how bad the issue is. I mean, there's all kinds of ranges of mental health issues. It can be as simple as stress. We all go through stress. That's a mental health issue. If you are burdened with stress and it is causing you to have problems with your health, you can't sleep, you are experiencing a mental health issue. That is a medical thing. It is medically proven that you are better health-wise when you get so many hours of sleep. If you cannot sleep at night, you have a mental health issue. You have a health issue in general. Mm-hmm. And it's probably related to mental health in regards to being stressed out. You're worried about too many things. Every single one of us is dealing with a mental health issue. We are, whether we even acknowledge it or not. The question is it so much so that we have to back away, step away from doing certain stuff and take a collective big sigh and take a break or seek professional help? Or let it get out of hand to where the horrible thing would be to take your own life or do something to other people, then take your own life, or do bad things and horrible things, or treat yourself really badly, or do bad things to your family members or your kids, neglect, abuse, whatever, and you take it out on them. I mean, there's so many stretches and places and forks in a row that mental health, if it's not addressed, it can get out of hand. We have seen this. We've seen this with shootings in our country. We've seen it with senseless violence in our country. Every single one of those people had mental health issues. You know how I know that? Because no sane person walks into a place and shoots a whole bunch of people. Mental health is as big of an issue as it's ever been before because it's been amplified by COVID. It is a mental health issue for kids that, and we've been lucky in our area, our kids went to school all year long. There in California, I believe they didn't go back to school until March or April. Can you imagine being at home, remote learning for 10 months and not being able to socialize with your friends? Can you imagine not being able to play sports or extracurricular activities or being in band because of COVID on the East or West Coast? Can you imagine that? Omaha Public Schools didn't have sports last year. Did you know that? These kids were transferring to Papillion and Millard South, Millard North, the suburbs or whatever. They were trying to go play, and the schools had to cut them off from enrolling because they didn't have enough room for the kids for classes. And obviously, you didn't have room for them on the sports teams because these kids just badly wanted to play and wanted to be able to go to school and not stay home and remote learn or not miss out on sports experiences. You don't think those kids are dealing with mental health issues? What about kids that have to wear masks all day long for a whole year? You don't think kids have a bit of a mental health issue with that? You don't think teachers do? You don't think administrators have mental health issues dealing with COVID as to what we got to make sure that we have sanitation supplies, got to make sure there's temperature check machines at the front. We got to worry about fan restrictions. We got to worry about keeping people 6 feet apart. We got to make sure that if something happens with the basketball or the football, that we clean it off properly. You know, got to make sure that, you know, we don't allow people to park in certain places. We got to keep people out of the press box and spread people out because we had to last year and sit outside. I mean, you don't think athletic directors, principals, superintendents, teachers, you don't think they have mental health issues? You don't think the medical care professionals, the doctors that are dealing with you and the nurses? And I mean, come on, everybody is dealing with some kind of mental health challenge. You may not acknowledge it. You may not want to acknowledge it. But we all do. I have my issues. Dusty has his issues. We all do. Now, the question is, are those issues so bad that we have to seek help? Are they so bad that we need to seek help? Are they so bad that we have to have a break? And in the case of Simone Biles, apparently it was bad enough to where she couldn't focus on what she needs to do. And she said, listen, I could hurt myself. I could also be very, that would be very selfish if I go out there and perform horribly and hurt my team as a whole. And she decided, you know what? It's probably best because only she knows her mental state of mind. It took a lot of guts for her to step away from something that everybody else so badly wants, including people that know nothing about her until Olympic time. it took a lot of guts for her to step away and say, you know what? I'm not going to hurt my team here because I feel like I might because I just can't concentrate on what I got to do. Whether it's selfishly she didn't want to get hurt or if it's simply, you know what? I could have been selfish. I could act like nothing was wrong, go out there and absolutely not perform at my standards. In her first event, she did. She didn't perform as well as to her standards. So there wasn't something quite right then. She realized it. And she's like, I don't want this to go the wrong direction. Because can you imagine Simone Biles went out there and absolutely struggled and was it just really performed poorly? Can you imagine the criticism she'd catch from the national talking heads and people sitting on their couch? Can you imagine? What's wrong with Simone Biles? Simone Biles choked under the pressure. That's what it would have been.
No, absolutely.
Instead, she doesn't put herself in that predicament because she's like, I know I'm not quite right. And she gets just chastised for that. Now, there are people, to their credit, that have come to her support and her defense, and they rightfully should. Okay? And by the way, why do we care so much whether Simone Biles participates or not? It's her body.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's what I hear about vaccines, right? That's the same people. Some of the same people that are all up against vaccines, which you have a right to be and say, it's my body. I don't want to put this in. It's not FDA approved. I respect the crud out of that. I respect people wanting to get people vaccinated to keep people safe. I get both sides. Totally do. I've walked that fence going, should I not get vaccinated? We talked about the other day. But if you're sitting here saying, well, I should have the right to choose whether or not I should be vaccinated, Simone Biles has the right to choose whether she wants to participate in the Olympics, whether she has mental health issues or not. Why do you care so much? It doesn't impact you directly. Like, people not getting vaccinated could impact you directly.
Mm-hmm.
All right? But Simone Biles not competing in the Olympics doesn't affect anybody directly except her own team. That's it.
Yeah.
Her coach and her team, and herself, and it affects probably her family members and friends. But it doesn't affect Joe Blow that's sitting on his couch all mad and talking all this stuff on social media about how she's such a wimp and she's a disgrace and she quit and she's a quitter. I mean, people got to get a grip. Perhaps the fact that people are saying all these things bad about her totally tells you that you are more like her than you realize because that's a sign of mental illness. You're ripping people you don't even know. How is that sane? I mean, the mean things they've said about Simone Biles, it's just like, how quickly did you turn? You know, when she won the Olympics and did everything in 16, it was, she's the media darling. We love her. And now all of a sudden, it's just immediately you turn on somebody. And she did, I would say, the unselfish thing. And that was, I think that the easy selfish thing is to just keep fighting through it. The unselfish thing was to say somebody else should participate in my place because I think I'm going to hurt my team more than I help it. And only she knows that. Not Joe Blow, not a talking head on ESPN or Fox, not Michael Wilbon or Tony Kornheiser and all these other people that want to talk about it. I see them on the TV screens. I even listen to them, and I know what they're saying. And it's like, dude, this is a person who bleeds just like we all do, and she did what was best for herself. But I would argue she did what was best for her team as well.
Yeah, there's too many people overlooking that part of it. Because you see the comments.
They automatically think she's just going to be awesome.
Yeah. Well, and you see the comments like, if she pulled out of the team events, how can she perform individually? She should just go home. And it's like, okay, listen, put yourself in a position where you're not feeling good, right?
Right.
And some things that you do are going to impact more than just you. They're going to impact. Say I'm doing something here at the radio station. It's not going right. It's going to impact you.
Sure.
And I want to let you know, hey, I'm not at the top of my game today.
Sure.
I might have you do this.
Right.
Because I'm not there. I can't do it.
Sure.
But if it's something that's only impacting me,
mm-hmm.
I can deal with that maybe a little bit more, right?
Right.
I can be like, well, this isn't hurting anybody but me. I'm going to go power through it, and I'm going to get it done.
Right.
But if I have to do that for a team,
mm-hmm.
if I'm impacting that whole thing, what if I go out there, I'm feeling so bad, so nervous, so stressed that I know I'm not competing at anywhere near even a medal level,
right?
Bronze medal level, right?
Mm-hmm.
At anywhere near even 20% of maybe what I usually do. That's why you don't do it, right? Because it's like, I'm going to go out here and perform and be terrible, and mm-hmm. we're not even going to get a bronze as a team.
Right.
Like, we're not meddling at all because
right.
I'm so bad today.
Right.
So what do? You think in your mental capacity that you do have that I'm not here today, I'm not right, I got to step aside and let them take it and let them do what they do. Because, listen, the whole team made the Olympics, not just Simone Biles.
Thank you.
That means they're world-class athletes, everybody on the team.
They're all qualified.
We all look at Simone Biles. We all look at Katie Ledecky because of what they do is just beyond the stratosphere of normal, right?
Yes.
It's beyond what Simone Biles can do athletically is beyond anything we've ever seen in gymnastics, women's gymnastics anyway. And, I mean, for crying out loud, they were talking about that she should not be able to get full scores because she's too good. That was one of the talking points about Simone Biles earlier this summer, was that she's too good, so the scoring system should change when she's out there because she's beating everybody so bad, okay? But from the flip side, these are all world-class athletes if they're competing in the Olympics. Simone Biles is not the only gymnast for the USA team. So I think that we get too focused on that, but we understand that Simone Biles knows that. She knows that everybody is here for a reason and that she doesn't want to take away from what they could do because she wants to be selfish. I mean, I totally understand it. And they're like, well, how could she go out there and compete individually? Well, if she feels individually like she's only letting herself down, then maybe she should tell the coach, maybe you should put somebody else in this individual event to make our country look better. But for her individually, she can do it. And as you see, she's stepped out of the all-around competition anyway individually for this week. Mm-hmm. I don't know if she'll do anything next week or not. Nobody does. But it's just like put yourself in those shoes. You understand. I mean, if you can't understand that you feel a little bit more pressure if you're doing something that involves somebody else and you're going to let somebody else down, because I do.
Sure.
I mean, if I'm on a basketball team when I was in high school compared to when I was playing tennis, it's like I don't want to do something wrong to let these people down. But on the tennis court, I mean, I played doubles, but it's still only one person compared to 10 people on my team that I'm letting down if I'm not all there.
Right.
And it's just like you feel a different amount of pressure. I do anyway, if I'm trying to represent more people than just myself.
I do hear the argument, well, listen, I don't feel great, and I have days where I feel horrible, and yet somehow I need to go to work, and I fight through it. I've heard that argument. You know, and I get it. It must be nice.
We don't all react the same way to this.
True, but what they're saying is it must be nice to just suddenly stop and there's no repercussion for you per se. Whereas if I have all kinds of issues or I just simply say, you know what, I'm not feeling it for 3 days, I'm not mentally sharp enough, and I just don't show up to work for 3 days, there's repercussions. I'm either going to get maybe suspended, fined, fired, you know, or I've used up my sick days or my vacation time. And so I got to fight through it. It must be nice. Simone Biles can just say, I'm out. And I do get that a little bit. But at the same time, she's not working for a paycheck. She's representing the country. The way she makes money would be endorsements.
Mm-hmm.
So by her not competing, that's costing her even more money. And she's like, fine. She's thought that through, I'm sure.
Yeah. We could get in a whole other discussion about if you need to miss 3 days of work and they're going to reprimand you for it for mental health. But
true. They shouldn't. Yeah. But what people are saying is, well, I might just not be feeling it today. And then, of course, now you're talking about the degrees of how bad you feel. Like, we have no idea how bad Simone Biles is feeling.
She's put on. Nobody does.
I mean, you see her with a smiley face and she talks in an upbeat spirit, as we just heard a moment ago. And you sit there and you listen to that and you go, that doesn't sound like somebody battling mental health issues.
Yeah.
Well, but you can't hear the mental health part.
No, and it's
between the ears.
Reaction's different to different scenarios, too.
That's right.
I like everybody's been, you know, when you talk about these things, I'm like, I am not in Simone Biles' mind. Nobody else is. I'm not in Naomi Osaka's mind. Nobody else is. And it's like, I can't answer the questions that you supposedly want to have because nobody can accept them. And they're given their best shot of trying to answer those questions right now. And it's like, you know what? First of all, it's none of my business. But
some talking head on either Fox or CNN, I don't know which one it was, I saw somebody posted it, which I was like, why give that person attention? But and then I guess, why am I saying it? But I'm not going to say his name. But he was just saying that our everybody has just become weak. Our country's just weak. Everybody's weak. One person decides not to compete in the Olympic gymnastic all-around competition, and somehow the entire country has become complete wusses?
Yeah.
That seems to be a bit of a stretch. Yeah. Just this is the overreaction, knee-jerk. Sometimes people just need to I mean, we say everybody has a voice and should have a voice. I don't know. Sometimes I think that some people shouldn't have a voice at all. Medal count, Japan with 12 golds leads in that department. U.S. has the most medals with 30. U.S. with 10 golds, 11 silvers, and 9 bronzes. China in second with 25 overall medals. Japan, the host country, the most golds with 12. All right. The show is not complete unless we talk about realignment for at least a few minutes. And the last couple days, we've had a lot of things to say about realignment. Yesterday, Oklahoma and Texas took the next necessary step towards joining the SEC and forming college football's first super conference. The two schools yesterday filed a joint letter formally requesting admission to the conference beginning July 1st of 2025. The University of Texas at Austin, University of Oklahoma sent the request to Southeast Conference Commissioner Greg Sankey. The statement reads, the joint request seeks an invitation for membership in the SEC starting on July 1st, 2025. The two universities look forward to the prospect of discussions regarding the matter. SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey released his own statement acknowledging the letter, but noted officially that the conference has not proactively sought new members. Of course. Still, the transition seems imminent. Conference presidents and chancellors have reportedly scheduled a meeting for tomorrow to discuss adding the two blue bloods. A three-fourths majority vote equal to 11 of the conference 14 members must approve expansion in order to add teams. Sankey went on to say the University of Oklahoma and University of Texas, two esteemed academic institutions. I love how they do this. Let me reread that. University of Oklahoma and the University of Texas, two esteemed academic institutions with storied athletic programs, as if this isn't about athletics. Today submitted formal requests for invitations to become members of the Southeastern Conference of 2025. While the SEC has not proactively sought new members, we will pursue significant change when there is a clear consensus among our members that such actions would further enrich the experiences of our student athletes and lead to greater academic and athletic achievement across our campuses. Bob Stoops had some thoughts, too, which I'll get to in a moment. But first, let's hear from the greatest commissioner of all time, Bob Boolsby. Big Bob, as I call him now, or should I call him Little Bobby? Or should I call him Ricky Bobby? The Big 12 Conference, this is the statement from Bob Boolsby. This is word for word. You ready? Bob Boolsby's statement, representing the Big 12. The Big 12 Conference has learned that the University of Oklahoma and the University of Texas have submitted formal requests to the SEC to be considered for membership beginning with the 2025-26 athletic year. The events of recent days have verified that the two schools have been contemplating and planning for the transition for months, and this formal application is the culmination of those processes. We are unwavering in the belief that the Big 12 provides an outstanding platform for its members' athletic and academic success. We will face the challenges head-on, and we have confidence that the Big 12 will continue to be a vibrant and successful entity in the near term and into the foreseeable future. End of quote. That is Bob Boolsby with the statement from the Big 12. Quick thoughts from you.
I can't anymore with Bob Boolsby. It's with whatever the Big 12 is.
Do you put any credence in any word he says anymore?
No, I mean.
He lost all credibility with me when he said, when he was asked directly about conference realignment, it's a mute conversation right now, a week before this all broke, and it doesn't keep me up late at night. It doesn't keep me up at night. You lost all credibility with me, and I don't even listen to a word Bob Boolsby says now. There's no point.
So we read these
things. He was wrong then, and he's wrong now. That's the way I look at it. He was wrong then, and he's wrong now.
Yeah, it's like we read these things because we have to, because that's what's out, right? I want to do that on my sports cast, but it's not professional, right?
Right, sure.
Like, I want to read that and be like, I just can't with Bob Boolsby anymore. Anyway, the Royals last night.
Yeah. Oh, no, I hear you.
And it's like, I'm just like, what are we doing? Like, just don't even. Why did he even have to say anything yesterday?
Well, here's
it's the same thing he said the day before, just saying, oh, they've now officially applied for the SEC.
But here's the point that John Weefald, former K-State president, we heard yesterday on Tim Fitzgerald's podcast, Life of Fitz and Go Powercat, and he pointed that out. He goes, why isn't Bob Boolsby out there telling everybody we want Texas, Oklahoma, and telling and publicly saying, here's why you should stay.
Yeah.
Here's why you should stay. Oklahoma, Texas, we're fighting for you. Here's why you should stay. There is no public statement at all saying any of that. Now, granted, they had behind-the-door meetings, and Oklahoma, Texas were a part of it, and I'm sure they made a pitch, and Oklahoma, Texas was rolling their eyes. Fine. But publicly, he never said anything to let anybody know publicly that they really wanted to keep Texas or Oklahoma, or they valued them, or they even tried to keep them. But yet he can put out the same basic statement multiple times in the last 3 days, saying nothing really any different. It's like, so why didn't you have a statement about the other part, about how we really want Oklahoma, Texas to stay here, we value them? You never did that. And that was what John Weefald was saying. That's our leadership? That's the commissioner of the Big 12? Are you kidding me? As John Wiefeld said, the Big 12 is over without Texas, Oklahoma. Those were his exact words, not mine.
Yeah.
So Bob Stoops, former coach of Oklahoma, he put this in the Oklahoman, okay, newspaper. And I quote, because as you can imagine, there are a lot of people upset with Oklahoma and Texas because they're leaving. And who are the people that are upset? The eight remaining schools.
Yeah.
All of your fan bases of K-State, KU, Iowa State, West Virginia, Texas Tech, Baylor, TCU, and Oklahoma State. Those are the eight that are all upset with Oklahoma, or shall I say disappointed. I think the seven are disappointed, and Oklahoma State's mad as heck.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's clear, and it makes sense. But listen to what Bob Stoops had to say about conference realignment. He said, and I quote in the Oklahoman, "Let's set the record straight. Oklahoma's move to the SEC is what's best for Oklahoma. The reality is that conferences are now more important than ever, and with limited spots, the strongest conferences would not accept Oklahoma if we were to require Oklahoma State to join as well. By joining the SEC, we ensure the state's flagship university will be represented nationally while protecting our rich football history for many years to come. To move forward in any other manner would be to the detriment of Oklahoma, OU, and the state of Oklahoma." End of quote. Couple things in there. Some very straightforward shots at Oklahoma State. First of all, what stands out to me, he says the strongest conferences would not accept Oklahoma if we were to require Oklahoma State to join as well. And remember the last time realignment possibility about Oklahoma leaving, the state legislators are like, we really need them to be tied to the hips. We know Oklahoma State and Oklahoma have to go together, which, by the way, there is nothing in stone that says that. That's just legislators saying they'd rather keep them together. All right? Kind of like the Board of Regents of the state of Kansas would like to keep KU and K-State together. And I'll tell you why that's just such hogwash anyway here in a moment. And the other thing he does, he says, by joining the SEC, we ensure the state's flagship university will be represented nationally. So he's saying Oklahoma is a bigger deal than Oklahoma State. That's what he's saying. We're the flagship university. You're the little brother, Oklahoma State. You're nice and cool, and you win some games, but you're not a power. You're not a brand. You're not a blue blood. And quite frankly, you're not even the flagship university of our state anyway, so why are you whining? I mean, there's some major shots at Oklahoma State in that statement.
Yeah, I'm going to look this up, see when these two universities were founded. Because,
uh-huh.
You know, usually the flagship university is the state university of the, like, the state university of Oklahoma is Oklahoma State, because that was the land-grant state.
Uh-huh.
The land-grant university, like Kansas State University, was the state's university.
Uh-huh.
That's why it's called Kansas State University.
Okay.
They're both 1890 is when they were founded, but it does say that Oklahoma State's the public land-grant research university in Stillwater, Oklahoma, founded in 1890 under the Morrill Act, which was for their state, right?
Right.
So it's interesting that you can just claim that you're the flagship university when that you're both founded in 1890. And
right.
I don't even think Oklahoma claims a flagship university as a state, to be completely honest.
No, but Bob Stoops
will.
Has claimed it is.
You can claim you're the flagship university for college football if you want to do that, because that would be accurate, right?
Right.
It would completely be accurate that you're big brother and that's little brother in the football world. But
right. Right.
But that's what all this is about, is football anyway. So
sure. Now, let's go back to something I didn't have time to get to yesterday. As the future of the Big 12 Conference hangs in the balance, one thing is clear. The University of Kansas will need approval from the Kansas Board of Regents to make any type of move regarding its conference affiliation. That fact is spelled out in black and white in the Board of Regents bylaws and policies online. While Oklahoma and Texas formally request invitations to the SEC on Tuesday, the future of the conference and its eight remaining members appears to be uncertain. If moving on from the conference it has called home for nearly three decades is viewed as the right move for Kansas, KU would need to have the board's blessing to even begin discussing joining another conference. Any change by a state university in its athletic conference membership shall require expedited board chairman and board president and CEO approval before entering negotiations relative to such change, the policy reads. That was not always the case, however. According to the minutes provided at their March 17th meeting, the policy on requiring a Board of Regents approval to begin negotiations was adopted in March of this year. No such policy existed the first time conference realignment hit college athletics in 2011-2012. However, according to the minutes of a Board of Regents meeting from December of 2020, the approval policy was first proposed to the board more than 18 months ago, and it surfaced here again recently. So let's try to clean this up and summarize based on what we're reading here, is that the Board of Regents have to basically allow KU and K-State. Let's say KU comes to the Board of Regents and they say, we want to negotiate with the Big Ten to join the Big Ten. And K-State comes to the Board of Regents and they say, we want to negotiate with the Pac-12 or the Mountain West. The board has to give approval, apparently, before they have negotiations. Do you really think that's the order it's going to be done?
No, I don't think that they'll have that kind of overstepping. Like, I think the board's probably told them, hey, do what you need to do.
Yes.
And then once you need to get approval to join, or, you know, once there's actually some traction here, tell us what you're doing.
Right.
I think this came out and it's set up this way because I think a lot of people just assume that the Board of Regents won't approve anything unless they're together.
Right.
It's set up this way so the individual universities can contact the Board of Regents by themselves, not together, to say, hey, we're looking at different conferences.
So I've heard some people saying KU and K-State have to stay together. That's completely inaccurate.
Yeah.
They don't have to stay together. And I've heard K-State fans say that. I've heard KU fans don't seem to be saying as much as K-State fans. K-State fans seem to... It almost seems like K-State fans seem to want to have KU K-State go on longer and care more about KU K-State matchups than KU fans do, based on what I've seen, okay? Like, there are concerns. I mean, KU still wants to play K-State, don't get me wrong. But there seems to be more of a, more people, like, worried about how K-State won't be able to play KU twice in basketball, which is weird because KU dominates in basketball. Now, football, I think K-State obviously enjoys beating the you-know-what out of KU in football. Maybe that's part of that, too. Mm-hmm. But if they go to separate conferences, they could still have a non-conference game for football, and they could still have a non-conference basketball game. Really, the only thing you wouldn't have is you wouldn't have a second basketball meeting if they're in separate conferences, and then you would not have the chance to meet a third time in a conference tournament. And, yes, you would lose a couple meetings. But here's the thing I say to people that say that KU and K-State have to be tied at the hip, that KU and K-State have to go to the same conference. Iowa and Iowa State are in the same conference. Nebraska and Creighton aren't in the same conference. Those are the two major Division I schools in Nebraska. Missouri and Missouri State are not even in the same levels. Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, yes, they're in the same conference. Colorado and Colorado State aren't in the Pac-12. They still play each other. KU and K-State, if they're in different conferences, they can still play each other. There's nothing that says they can't. So I'm honestly, for me, if I'm a K-State fan or a KU fan, I wouldn't get too riled up about, oh, no, we can't play each other. No, or we won't play each other as much. No, I you still get to play each other. That's not going to be a problem. Now, if you end up changing conferences and then KU refuses to play K-State, like Missouri and KU got into that whole thing, or if K-State refuses to play KU, okay, now it's different. Now it's different. But Iowa and Iowa State play every year in football. Colorado, Colorado State always play. Texas and Texas A&M used to play all the time until A&M left the conference in the Big 12.
Clemson and South Carolina, Clemson, Florida, South Carolina, Florida State, Florida, Georgia, State. Georgia Tech.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's not a problem. It's not a problem. It's not an issue, and it shouldn't be an issue. And then when people say, well, you know, we need both schools need to go to the same conference just for stability and like, that has nothing to do with it either. The stability is the conference you join and where you're the best fit. And I'm going to tell you right now, you know, I this is what I believe. I may be completely wet. I don't see a scenario at all where KU and K-State are in the same conference. I don't see a scenario where they're in the same conference. The only scenario, I guess you can say, is if they both hold tight to the ship before it goes down and they stay in the, you know, the lesser Big 12, and they're true with the other six members, and the eight, you know, have forged this unbelievable, unbreakable bond, and they're holding hands and singing Kumbaya, and then they go grab a few other schools from the AAC or wherever it is to get to 10 or 12. That's the only way KU and K-State are going to be in the same conference. I don't see KU and K-State both going to Pac-12. I don't see KU and K-State going to the Mountain West together. I don't see KU and K-State both going to ACC. I don't, obviously, KU and K-State aren't going to the SEC, and I don't see KU and K-State both going to the Big Ten. Now, the KU to K-State to the Big Ten would make sense geography-wise, but it doesn't make sense from a financial standpoint and for building the brand of the Big Ten. They don't need both Kansas schools. I don't even know if they need any of them, to be quite frank with you. I don't know if the Big Ten needs any of them. So I'll tell you what. I'll give you a different slant on this. We've talked about it ad nauseum for the last few days, and I know some people might be sick of conference realignment talk, but it has a gigantic impact on everything we do. When you get politicians involved and you get Board of Regents involved and we got your state legislators involved, this has become more than a sports thing. It is an economic thing as well. You know, it hurts. You know, if you don't have Oklahoma and Texas coming to town in Manhattan, instead you get Memphis and Cincinnati, are you going to have as many people that are going to be in Manhattan on game day and then going downtown, going to Aggieville and spending money?
No.
I mean, there's an economic impact just there in a small way right there. Yes, it impacts the fans in regards to travel if you got to go further away. So there's another impact. There's so many impacts of this decision by Texas and Oklahoma. And for those people that want to say and get all mad at Texas, Oklahoma, and I've seen some people and I had conversations on social media and I'm about ready to just quit doing that, that just don't get it. They don't stop to think for a second. Neither side does this. Like Texas, Oklahoma don't stop for a second and think, what if we were in their shoes? We can understand why they're mad at us because we're basically killing their conference. Mm-hmm. They don't want to acknowledge that. They're saying mean things, especially Texas, about how much better they are, even though they're the fifth best record in the Big 12 with 10 teams the last 10 years, which is there. So that means they're average. But they want to act like they're bigger and better than everybody, and they are when it comes to the brand name. They're right. You can argue that all you want, K-State and KU fans, but Texas is a bigger deal. It pains me to say that, but Texas is. They know it. You know why they're a bigger deal? Because the SEC isn't sitting here worried about KU or K-State. They're happy to bring in Texas. Texas knows they can go apply and odds are be admitted to another conference. They could ask any conference in America that they want to go in, and what conference is going to say no to Texas? Nobody. 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 If Texas came back to the Big 12 10 years from now, the Big 12 would be stupid to say, no, don't come back because of the money. And in Oklahoma, they also don't fully understand, Oklahoma fans, what everybody else is going through because they're one of the two and they joined Texas and they followed Texas's lead because Texas seems to be the one that instigated it all. And Oklahoma's like, well, listen, we don't want to be outside left alone in this conference and we don't want to be stuck tied at the hip of Oklahoma State. And Texas needed one person to go to SEC. From what I've heard and read, Texas, when they went to the SEC and talked about this, the SEC said, we need one more. We need two. And Texas is like, well, we know who we need to call. Oklahoma. You know, the two that hate each other so much but now are lying in bed together. So Oklahoma's like, well, you know what? We can put our problems aside. We have a rivalry. We don't like you. But for the betterment of our – for you – not for you, but for us personally, like Bob Stoops said, yeah, we're in. Sounds good. Let's go to the SEC. On the flip side – KU and K-State fans that I've been dealing with on social media, they sit here and they're all mad at Oklahoma and they're all mad at Texas and they're ticked off and they're like they're killing the conference and they always had too much power and so forth and so on. And there's some that say, well, good riddance, good luck, you're gonna get smoked in the SEC. Okay, whatever, they may not, but they at least have a conference. Because I don't know what KU and K-State, does that make you feel better? Why does it make KU and K-State fans feel better when they sit here and say, oh, Texas is going to finish sixth in the SEC and Oklahoma's never going to beat Alabama. Yeah, but they have a conference and they're going to make, immediately you're going to make $28 million more than you. And actually it's going to be much more than that because your Big 12 contract's going to go south when it comes to the next TV deal, which there won't be one in my opinion by 2025. I don't think the Big 12 will exist. I could be wrong on that, but if they do, it'll be at a much lower level financially, as we pointed out yesterday. And so KU and K-State fans are mad as hell at Oklahoma and Texas, and they're upset with this, and it's Oklahoma Texas' fault the Big 12's dissolved, or it's going to dissolve, or it might dissolve, and so forth and so on. And then I asked the same question that I asked just a moment ago about Oklahoma and Texas, for them to take a step back and understand why these eight members are mad at you. If you don't understand it, then you're not trying to understand both sides. And on the flip side, if you're sitting here as KU and K-State not understanding why Texas and Oklahoma are leaving the Big 12, hopefully you understand they're leaving because it's more money and, honestly, more stability. And, let's be honest, way better leadership. So there's three reasons why Oklahoma and Texas immediately can say why they're leaving. But if you're a KU K-State fan and you're just holding it against Oklahoma and Texas and you hate them because they're leaving and messing up your conference, ask yourself this question. If you were Kansas State University and KU University, Kansas University, University of Kansas, or Iowa State, and you had the same opportunity Oklahoma and Texas have. If Texas, let me rephrase this. If we say, I just told you, Texas needed a partner to go to the SEC. Mm-hmm. If Texas would have called Kansas and said, hey, we need one more to go to the SEC, are you with us? What do you think Kansas would have said?
Absolutely.
If Texas would have called Kansas State and said, hey, we need one more, Oklahoma decided they're going to stay in the Big 12, and we need one more, will you join us at the SEC? What do you think K-State would have said?
Where do I sign?
If Texas called Iowa State and said, hey, man, we need somebody to go to the SEC, Oklahoma and Kansas, K-State have turned us down, what do you think Iowa State would say?
Same.
Where do I sign?
Where do I sign? Absolutely.
I could
me on the list.
I could do this four more times, and yes. I think you get my point, ladies and gentlemen. KU and K-State people can sit here and they can rip and they can be mad at Oklahoma and Texas for leaving the conference. But if they were in the same situation and they had the opportunity to go to the SEC, they would have done it without even thinking. So here's what I want to propose. For all of your OU Texas fans that are actually upset about this move because they're worried now that they won't dominate the SEC like they did the Big 12, or they somehow think that they have a less chance of winning a national championship, I want those schools, Texas and Oklahoma, I want you to take that anger and don't put it towards your universities for joining the SEC. I want you to bottle up that anger. Are you with me? For the other eight institutions, KU and K-State in particular, I want you to quit yelling at KU. I want you to quit yelling at K-State at each other about something, because that is stupid. It has nothing to do with you two. That has nothing to do with this breakup, okay, with you, Oklahoma and Texas leaving. I want you, Mr. Jayhawk and Wildcat fan, or Mrs., I want you to bottle up your anger as well that you have towards Texas and Oklahoma. I want you to bottle it up, okay? Then I want to take that anger that you have, and I want you to pour that anger into a big half-yard glass that I had at Yard House as a nice big Blue Moon that I drank with my wife. All right? I want you to take your 16 ounces of anger, and I want you to put it in the 32-ounce half-yard glass. And then, Oklahoma and Texas fans, I want you to take your 16 ounces anger that you have towards the lesser rands that you call the Big 12 now that you're going to leave, and the anger you might have towards your people leaving the Big 12 that you might be dominating or you're worried about being an also-ran, and I want you to take that anger, and I want you to put it into that half-yard glass. Now we have 32 ounces of anger. Where should you mail that anger to?
I don't know what the address is in Dallas, but to Bob Bowlesby's office.
Thank you. ladies and gentlemen, this is what usually happens when people get emotional and they don't take time to think. It's knee-jerk reactions. You get all mad at Oklahoma, Texas, because they did what you would have done if you were the same situation. In Oklahoma, Texas, you brag about what you've done, and you don't understand that you would be the same way. You'd be sore and upset if you were one of the eight left hanging. And the reason that we are in this situation is because, in my humble opinion, your commissioner and your leadership, and you can sit here and you can point fingers at all the institutions within the Big 12, but you certainly can point the finger at Bob Bowlesby. And you can just point at the leadership of Dan Beebe back in the day. You can point to the fact that the Big Ten is going to get the first chance to renew their TV contract after 2022, the SEC after 2023, and the Big 12's got to wait, because they were late to the table, of course, 2025. You're directing all your anger in the wrong places, in my opinion. Your anger should be at the people that led this conference to the mess that it is now. You should be upset with the leadership of this conference that allowed Nebraska and Missouri and A&M and Colorado to leave in the first place. Don't kid yourself. The Big 12 became weaker when you lost those four institutions. You replaced them with TCU and West Virginia. And while those are decent programs, they don't nearly come close to replacing those four. Then you had a chance to add a decent option in Louisville, and you turned them down. You had 17 institutions just a few years ago when Big 12 said we're open for considering expansion, 17 different institutions, most of them, you know, mid-major level, you know, like a Central Florida, whatever, You had 17 institutions that applied and put their sales presentation together to join the Big 12. And you, the leadership of the Big 12, chose to do nothing.
Nothing.
You chose to say no thanks to all 17. It's like you had a rental house. You had an apartment available for rent. And you turned down every applicant and you rather have kept it empty. Does that make a lot of sense? Now, granted, the 10 members of the Big 12 may have said, we aren't any better by adding these two. We're better staying at 10, so we have two less mouths to feed. Okay? I understand that. But the point I'm trying to make here, and this has been my point all the way through this, you know it. People listening on a regular basis know it, but if you're late tuning in the show, the lack of proactivity of this conference is what's killed it. The lack of leadership and being reactive, and instead of being reactive, it should have been proactive. And if this conference was proactive, and if this conference actually had leadership that was worth a darn, you would not have Oklahoma and Texas bolting the SEC immediately as they can right now. It is a modern-day miracle that the Big 12 was able to piece it together for 10 more years after the last conference realignment in 2010-2011. I didn't think it'd last this long. And I know when I talk with Todd Clover, and yes, he's a Sooner fan, but I talk to other people that aren't Sooner and Texas fans, and I talk to other people in the sports radio business and people that are even closer to stuff than I am, and I know I talk to a couple people I know in the Nebraska Athletic Department. Everybody pointed to 2025. When the next TV deal is done, like many people thought the Big 12 was dead in 2010 or 11. It was on life support. Chuck Ninus, the interim commissioner, saved the day, as you pointed out the other day. It was not Bob Bowlesby.
Yeah.
So Bob Bowlesby hasn't ever saved anything for the Big 12.
He's never taken this conference through any kind of storm.
No, he hasn't.
And it's always like, what are you doing?
Right.
When he does something.
We all knew that 2025 was D-Day. 2025 was going to be the year that this thing was probably going to fall apart. And it's been expedited because Texas and Oklahoma say, oh my, SEC's new TV deal, we want to be a piece of that. The Big Ten, there's going to expire here very soon after the 2022 season. And Oklahoma and Texas were proactive, and they found a new home. Nebraska was proactive. They found a new home. Missouri was the most proactive. They wanted out before Nebraska, and then they got shut down by the Big Ten, but still eventually went to the SEC, and they've had some success in football. Basketball, they've been okay. And I sit here, and I look at the history of the Big 12 since 2010, and there's one common theme I keep coming back to. The institutions that were proactive, the leadership of the conferences that were proactive, are the ones kicking everybody's ass right now. No, Nebraska's not kicking people's butt on the football field. No, I get that. No. They have $130 million more by being in the Big Ten than the Big 12 the last 10 years. Okay? They're stable. They know they have a conference that isn't going to fold. They're not dependent on just two universities. If Ohio State and Penn State leave, or Ohio State and Michigan, will it hurt them? Quite a bit. They still got some really good institutions in the Big Ten. Whereas the Big 12, it was always Oklahoma and Texas and everybody else, even when Nebraska was in it. And Nebraska was proactive. Missouri was proactive. They've done okay. Missouri's fine in the SEC. They've actually done better than I thought they would. And financially, they're well, well off. So when Nebraska was proactive, Missouri was proactive. The Big Ten was proactive by grabbing Nebraska. The SEC was proactive, grabbing Missouri and others.
Yeah.
Texas A&M was proactive. They got out away from Texas just like Nebraska, went to the SEC, and they've had success in football there, winning 10 games. What proactive thing has the Big 12 done since 2010? Name one.
I can't.
Can't. You know why? Because there isn't one.
No.
And I'm going to tell you something. In the business world that we live in, and yes, I'm so sorry, it is not just a game. It hasn't been for decades. In the business world, and college athletics is part of the business world, in the corporate world, all right? In everyday society, if you're reactive, you will be left behind. If you are proactive, you will be ahead of the curve or right with the curve? To make an example of regular everyday life. So you're stubborn, right? I don't need no smartphone. I don't need no internet. I'll get my phone book and look up that number. I don't need no car with all those fancy gadgets. I just need that roll down window. I don't need even a button. Oh yeah, they don't make those cars anymore. So now guess what you have to do? You have to be reactive and you have to deal with a car that has the button electric windows, even though you may not want them. But the proactive part of you would be, okay, I've got to do this. It actually could help me in whether I'm doing something in farming to keep my books easier, to figure out where my land is, where the rain is coming down. I'll know immediately with technology that we got 43 hundredths of rain on this one field. It makes farming easier, granted more expensive to get bigger equipment, this and that. But what I'm trying to say is technology usually makes things easier. I can look up a phone number on the internet a lot faster than you try to look it up in a phone book. I can answer any question you may have very quickly on the internet well before you can find it in a book. See where you're being left behind? And here's a constant in life. And we said this before, there are three constants in life, unfortunately. Death, taxes, and change. And taxes shouldn't be, but they are. Death always is. And change always is. It's a constant in life. And if you're not going to roll with the punches and go with the change, you will be left behind. Can you survive? Sure. Would you be a lot better off if you adapted or were proactive? I mean, you don't have to be super proactive. Just go with the flow and at least be a part of something that is proactive. But when you sit here and you're stubborn and you don't do anything and you're reactive and you're set in your ways, guess what? People ain't going to stop and wait for you. And that's exactly what Oklahoma and Texas are doing. They're like, dude, we've been carrying this conference. And I know KU and K-State fans don't want to hear this. And I know certain people with their colored glasses, they just will not acknowledge this, even though they know it's true. Deep down, they know it's true. But they'll never admit it publicly or out loud. But Texas and Oklahoma carried this conference. And you're like, well, no, how are they going to carry a conference? They were 7-5 in football. No. It ain't about the records. It has nothing to do with the records. Oklahoma and Texas has carried this conference. That's a fact. You may not like it. I don't like it. You may despise it. I despise it. You may hate it. I hate it. I wish there was equal value to all the schools, or at least more than just two. Mm-hmm. But guess what? You allowed it to get to that point. You allowed Nebraska to leave. You didn't fight super hard to keep them, in my opinion. You allowed Missouri to leave. You allowed Colorado to leave. You allowed A&M to leave. Now you had 8 dissenters instead of 10 versus Texas and Oklahoma. So you had less power to fight them. And now you're sitting here left in the bag. And you're sitting here wanting to blame Oklahoma and Texas for all that? You made your bed, Big 12 leadership. You made your bed. And now you got to lie in it. You were so reliant on two universities, and if you don't think Oklahoma and Texas was carrying this conference, then why are we worried about it dissolving right now? If Oklahoma and Texas weren't carrying the conference, then we shouldn't have anything to worry about. The 8 remaining schools should be able to be just fine moving forward. They don't have to worry about anybody poaching them. They have nothing to worry about leaving. They don't even have to add schools, Dusty, because their 8 teams are super strong. If Texas and Oklahoma wasn't carrying the Big 12, why is everybody talking about the Big 12 falling apart? Why are people talking about the Big 12 adding a lot lesser schools? Why do they need to add schools? If the Big 12 without Oklahoma, Texas is so good and so strong, then why are we talking about this? Because Oklahoma, Texas did carry this conference. Because of their brand. For those that want to say Oklahoma has gone for the money instead of trying to win championships, I can understand where you get that line of thought, but just to give you a line of thought as well is that, think this through, Oklahoma and Texas aren't stupid. Oklahoma and Texas talked about this for 3 to 6 months with the SEC. Trust me, they have thought this thing out. I guarantee you that. Mm-hmm. And Oklahoma, this all coincides with name, image, and likeness, ladies and gentlemen. It also coincides with the proposed 12-team college football playoff that would go in effect in a couple years. So Oklahoma or Texas, Well, Oklahoma, they make the playoff every year. They win the Big 12. If they win the Big 12, they usually make the playoff. If they go to the SEC, they're not going to be in the playoff. They're not going to win the SEC. How are they going to win a national championship? They have a better chance of winning a national championship in the Big 12 with least resistance than being in the SEC and being third or fourth in their conference. And here's the point you got to understand. How many national championships has Oklahoma won the last 6 years when they won the Big 12?
None.
How many playoff games have they won?
None.
None. So that hasn't worked. So try something different. Oklahoma now goes to the SEC. Oklahoma will be, there'll be two divisions. Oklahoma will be in one division, and they probably will be opposite Alabama, in my opinion. That'd be smart. I'd put Oklahoma, Texas, same division, and you'd maybe dream of Oklahoma, Texas, the winner, will play Alabama every year in the SEC title game. Now, maybe Georgia will be in the, I don't know how they're going to do divisions, but the point being is...
I think they're going to have to realign those divisions too.
They will. But Missouri OU and Texas will be in the same one. OU and Texas will be in the same division. They'd be crazy not to.
Absolutely,
So Oklahoma, Texas, same division. Alabama will be opposite of them. I'm pretty sure of that. So if Oklahoma and Texas, they end up winning their division, and then they lose to Alabama in the SEC title game, they'll both go to the 12-team playoff. In fact, in a 4-team playoff, it happens. Mm-hmm. In a 12-team playoff, they'll go. If Oklahoma finishes second in their division, they'll go. And in some cases, if they're in the toughest division, let's say it's Texas, Oklahoma, and Georgia, and they all have, like, two losses to beat up on each other, there's a very good chance that all three, plus Alabama and another team, it's very possible SEC will have 5 or 6 of the 12 spots in the college football playoff in a couple years if, in fact, that goes through. Mm-hmm. Oklahoma then gets into the playoff even and has more room for error because you lose a couple games. We still got second, third in our division. We still can make the playoff. And then it's a crapshoot sometimes in the playoff. And, yeah, you may still run into Alabama in the national championship game and lose or the semis, but there's also more of a chance for an upset to happen when you play more games in an extended playoff. See the NFL. See other playoff entities. So Oklahoma and Texas, you may say, well, they have less of a chance to win a national championship. First of all, Texas ain't coming close right now anyway in football. So what do they have to lose? Nothing. They gain $25, $28 million a year to go see if they can make it in the SEC. And Oklahoma winning the Big 12 hasn't won them anything when it comes to national titles. They haven't won one since 2000 or 01, which it was 2000 or 2001. And Bob Stoops was a young guy. That's the last time Oklahoma won a national championship in football. So if you're sitting here and talking about how the Big 12, you need the Big 12, if you're an Oklahoma fan saying you have to have the Big 12 to have a better chance of winning the national championship, you're 0 for your last 20. So I would say you have just as good a chance in the SEC. People are maybe misconstruing the argument. Like they relate that you have to win your conference to win a national title. No, you don't. Not when you're in the SEC, you don't.
No.
In the SEC, you don't have to win your conference to win a national title. Alabama's proven that. LSU's proven that. Heck, you don't have to even win your own division to win a national title. So there's a more room for error for Oklahoma and Texas to lose a few games. Like if you lose two, Oklahoma lost two last year in the Big 12, and they did not make the playoff. Mm-hmm. There were people saying that maybe they could have or should have, but they didn't. But if Oklahoma had the same record last year, when they go to the SEC with two losses, they'll be in the playoff. They'll be in the playoff. So I know there's a lot of different ways to look at this, and I'll add you one different slant to conclude the show. Why are we so scared about this alignment? Like, Max sent me a text, and he goes, so what? We go to a different conference. We still play. We move on. Big deal. Well, there is a big deal. It's about money. But here's my thing. The last possible resort I think KU and K-State should be thinking right now, this should be the absolute last resort, is keeping this conference together. Mm-hmm. KU would benefit by going to the ACC or the Big Ten instead of being in a watered-down Big 12. K-State would honestly probably benefit by going to the Mountain West instead of being in a watered-down Big 12. Especially with the way the college football playoff is supposedly going to be set up in 2 years, there's room for the Mountain West champion to be in that playoff. K-State ain't coming close to a playoff now in the Big 12. Now, I know there will be a few years they were. Don't get me wrong. But in a watered-down Big 12, is a watered-down Big 12 going to be any better than the AAC? Is a watered-down Big 12 going to be any better than the Mountain West? I don't know. I can't tell you that unequivocally.
You don't know,
We don't know. So if your first resort should be to latch on to the Big Ten, ACC, or Pac-12. That's the first one.
Absolutely.
Your second your second option or resort should be to go to a conference that really wants you, that you know there is some upside to. And your last resort, to me, the third option, is to stay with the status quo. That's the worst option, in my opinion. Now, if the Big 12 somehow can go convince USC and UCLA and somebody big to come to the Big 12, which I don't know who in the world in their right mind would, but if they somehow could pull off a stunner or rabbit out of their hat, okay, that changes the narrative a little bit. But that doesn't seem to be anything that's going to happen. And for KU fans, they're putting all their eggs in the, well, we have men's basketball, that's going to save us. I think it'll help you, but I don't know if it'll necessarily save you. I listened to a national guy who covers college football and the landscape of college football, and he's been on top of the playoffs. Not the playoffs, but he's been on top of the Oklahoma-Texas story from the very beginning. And he was asked point blank, how much does basketball factor in the equation? Does this help? Does Kansas have a leg up on everybody else in the Big 12 for conference realignment? And you know what he said? He goes, honestly, I don't think basketball matters. If you're a KU fan, that is the worst thing you can hear.
Literally nobody cares that Kentucky's in the SEC.
No.
You know what I'm saying? Like, look at some of the programs, right?
Right.
Nobody cares that Duke and North Carolina are in the ACC.
In football.
I mean, that's just where they're at.
Right.
Right? But they're there in football because they're there. But their basketball programs don't factor in to what ACC is thinking about with money.
Exactly. Part of me is actually excited if K-State goes to the Mountain West or Pac-12, wherever they land. Mm-hmm. Because all of a sudden, you could go to some really cool places if you want to go to a K-State game. And yeah, I know it'd be more travel, but it'd be something new and different. Part of me is excited if KU goes to the ACC. I'd love to go to a North Carolina. I'd love to see North Carolina come to Allen Fieldhouse, mm-hmm. You know? Or if the K-State goes to the Pac-12, it'd be kind of fun to see USC come to K-State for a football game, you know? Or what? I mean, there's all kinds of different things that can pop up out of it that could be fun and refreshing and new. Now, if it takes away all your rivalries, that's disappointing, and we've seen what's happened with Nebraska. But financially, there's no doubt, unless the Big 12 pulls some rabbits out of their hat, there's no doubt that if KU and K-State can go to either the ACC, the Big 10, or the Pac-12, they're going to be way better off financially and what they get every year than staying in the Big 12. And by the way, you may wonder what precipitated this whole thing recently to where Texas and Oklahoma decided out of the blue, which it wasn't out of the blue, it was to Bob Bowlesby, but it wasn't because they had been negotiating for 3 to 6 months and talking to the SEC for the last 3 to 6 months. But what I heard yesterday was that basically the quote one coach said is ESPN has become the new NCAA. The NCAA has no power anymore. The ESPN has more power than the NCAA. Mm. ESPN owned, they were the ones that had the Longhorn Network, okay? Like, Texas has it, but they always were in contact with Texas almost every day about the Longhorn Network because that's tied to ESPN.
Yeah, they're the ones that pay.
They're the ones that paid for it.
Distribute the money for the rights.
Right. So, anyway, apparently, the Big 12 approached ESPN. Or their TV partners, so Fox and ESPN, they approached them about, let's work ahead here and start to put together the framework for a new TV deal. Even though our deal ends in 4 years, they were, you know, and I'll be honest, that was at least being proactive. And they were talking about, and they're probably also out of fear because the Big Ten and the SEC is going to happen before them. So they're like, let's start working on the framework for a new TV deal. And you know what the response was? And this is including Texas and Oklahoma in this conversation. The response from ESPN and Fox or the TV people was, well, we had the COVID stuff and we really don't know where things are going to be, so we really don't want to visit that right now. Yet ESPN just worked out a deal with the SEC. So that tells you where the Big 12 ranks.
Yeah.
And when Texas, their new president, who by the way was at the table for the last media contract negotiating stuff, so he's privy to knowing what has been happening. The new Texas president, from what I heard yesterday, once he heard that the networks didn't want to even talk about working on a new deal right now, told him that ESPN, Fox, their TV partners don't value the neighborhood that Texas resides in. which the neighborhood, of course, is the Big 12. And that set off the alarm. And that's when Texas started talking to the SEC. So if you don't think, here's another thing. If you want to have anger towards somebody, have anger towards ESPN instead of Oklahoma or Texas. You should be angry at ESPN for maybe conniving to get this to work and putting a seed in people's ears and not, whatever. You can be mad at the lack of leadership in the Big 12, but it isn't all of, I mean, I'm going to go back again. If you were Oklahoma or Texas, why wouldn't you do this? If you're, if KU, State and KU could flip spots with OU and Texas, do you think they would not go to the SEC? You're crazy if you think they wouldn't have taken that invitation, which technically wasn't an invitation. They applied for it, and now they're going to be in, it looks like. So there are so many moving parts behind the scenes. Yes, it revolves around money, but there are people now talking very openly, before it was kind of quiet, that ESPN, the best phrase I heard was ESPN is the new NCAA. They, in essence, are almost a governing body because they're going to dictate who's going to go with what, and they're going to encourage conferences, hey, add these teams and we can increase your payouts and you can all make more money. If you add Texas and Oklahoma, we can get you more money, SEC. And they tell Texas, Oklahoma that, or Texas, and Texas gets Oklahoma to come along. That's where the seed was planted. And what do you think's going on right now with Fox and the Big Ten? Because Fox has Big Ten rights. Fox right now, according to reports, they are encouraging the Big Ten to go after and poach USC and UCLA and also Washington, one of the Washington schools, and even Oregon because of the media markets that they present. And obviously, LA is a gigantic market. And they are pushing for the Big Ten to go poach a couple from the Pac-12, and they could then have a bigger deal to compete with ESPN. And thus, yes, tell the Big Ten, you all members will make more money, just like the SEC is going to make more money with the addition of Texas and Oklahoma. So then the Pac-12 is in trouble. So then if you're sitting here, if that happens, you're a KU State KU going, well, do we really want to join the Pac-12 if that's possible? So the Big Ten and ACC might be your only options, or the Mountain West or the AAC. And I'm sorry, but KU ain't going to AAC. I can't even see that happening. They want to play with Wichita State in the same conference? I don't see that happening. And as you pointed out, the big full-time press, the Big Ten should be spending, and unless it's a waste of time, because according to reports the other day, Notre Dame's more than happy to stay an independent right now because they're the biggest free agent name out there. They can get a lot of stuff that you can get as a member without being officially a member. So they're going to keep playing that up. Plus, they got a TV deal with NBC. They've got a situation with the ACC through 2036 with other sports, so it could be a bit of a problem getting out of that, possibly. So the Big Ten, which ideally would be, like you said, Chicago and the Midwest and across the country, Notre Dame's the best eligible brand that's technically out there. But if you know Notre Dame isn't even going to consider it or not even serious about going fully into a conference, why would you waste your time there? You go spend your time and go get these West Coast teams. Add them to the Big Ten. And this comes back to what we said again. Why would you want Kansas and Kansas State if you can get USC and UCLA? Or you can get USC and Washington or Oregon? Those are bigger markets. And so this is the TV executives in the suits, in the big offices, in Fox quarters on the West Coast, and the headquarters in Bristol, Connecticut. These are the people that are playing the puppet show. These are the people that are actually creating this conference realignment. They are kind of pulling the strings, saying, hey, we can get you more money, Texas, if you leave the Big 12. Your neighborhood's much more lucrative in the SEC than the Big 12. That was the message, and Texas caught on to that message. And then Texas says, hey, Oklahoma, we need one more. We really prefer you. What do you say? And Oklahoma's like, well, why would we want to stay in a conference if you're leaving? And that goes down to the trickle-down effect. Now, why would KU and K-State and West Virginia, Iowa State want to stay in this conference if they could hook on with another big conference and get a heck of a lot more money than being in a watered-down Big 12? So there's a trickle-down effect right then and there. But quite frankly, this really starts with two things. The TV executives, TV networks, pulling strings to get as much money and saying to the universities, we'll give you a ton of money, but you've talking to the conferences, we'll give you a ton of money in the next TV deal on this condition. You add the LA market. Mm-hmm. You add the Texas market. Those are the conditions, or it's going to stay the same way it is. Those are the conditions that you got to deal with. And the other, of course, part that's really failed the Big 12, as we already established, is lack of proactive leadership. So if I'm a K-State KU fan, I am very concerned right now. But you will land somewhere. You will still have athletics. You will still have sports. And it might actually turn out to be a blessing in disguise for KU and K-State, possibly. It could be, depending on where they land.
Yeah. That's what everything depends on for every school that's involved in this, right?
I'm going to tell you right now, the most proactive school of the eight remaining schools may have a leg up on everybody else because they go find their home, which I could see West Virginia saying, we're going the AAC, or if somehow they can convince the ACC to take them, they'll be the next one to be out. And all it's going to take is one more. That's it. One of the remaining eight grabs a chair with another conference. Then that will I don't see how you can, I don't know how you recover from this now, but if one of the eight breaks from their collaborative efforts, which I say in quotation marks because I think it's BS, it's just a political front window dressing by the K-State, KU, and all the universities and the Big 12 with their statements talking about unity, okay? They're just biding time until they find the right spot. And one thing that would worry me if I'm KU and K-State, if I've got to wait on the Board of Regents approval, if I actually follow all this to a T, and I got to wait and other universities don't have to do the same thing, now I am behind the eight ball and I'm behind the curve again. And that worries me if I'm KU, K-State, if I've actually fully got to follow this Board of Regents bylaws and policies to where I got to wait for their blessing before I can truly negotiate with another conference, whereas Iowa State might not have the same rules. I don't know. I'd have to look it all up.
Yeah.
Or if Texas Tech has different rules and they can just go, or Oklahoma State would be one I think about, where now they could just say, well, Oklahoma's left. We don't have any rules. We can go wherever we want. We're going to go. We'll go. We don't have to. We're interested in the Big Ten. The Big Ten's interested in KU and Oklahoma State and K-State. And Oklahoma State's like, all right, man, let's get it going. We're ready to talk. And KU, K-State like, wait a minute. Got to talk to our Board of Regents. Really? We don't have time for this. We'll just go get USC and Oklahoma State and call it good. So that's another concern I'd have if I'm KU, K-State.
Yeah. I think they've already done that, to be honest with you.
I would think.
I think those calls have been made, and I would imagine the Board of Regents said, do what you need to do.
I would
kind of like
so.
What we were talking about earlier.
I would hope so.
If you need to actually do something, we'll expedite it and approve. I mean,
do you think the Board of Regents? Do you think the Board of Regents are set on making them go to the same conference?
I think that's why they came out and said what they said the other day.
Right.
Was to make sure that we understand that each one of these individual schools approaches us, not as together they don't approach us, but each individual school approaches us to see what they want to do, if they want to move forward or if they want to engage in a different conference or whatever.
Right.
I don't think that KU and K-State are tied at the hip at all.
And I'm glad that they aren't.
Yeah.
Now, some fans would like them to because they like it the way it's always been. And as we've said, you can like how it's always been, but it will not continue to be that way. And so it's whether you adapt with the change or you fall behind. Proactivity versus being reactive. There's a gigantic difference, not only in sports and college athletics, but also in life and in business and in everyday life. Think about it. If you react to trying to buy a house that you like and you sit and you waffle and somebody's proactive and they say, I'll take it for that price immediately, guess who won the house? Wasn't you.
People that were proactive are winning.
Most times they are. Winning. Every day. Defeat not an option. Have a great day, everyone.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.